You do play-by-plays of games. I mean, was that fun to write?
It was.
Because I could just imagine you sitting there redoing the whole game in your mind.
Well, you know, one of the things you have to be careful about in reading the newspapers of the day, they were very ebullient. Every game was the most incredible game played to date, and the fascinating fly catches, and wonderful flowery prose. But we had numbers of newspapers in town. Mm-hmm. So if it was not in the earlier games, but when the visiting team started to come through, you could get the Cincinnati newspaper and you get the New Orleans newspapers. And if they all agreed on what happened, then that's probably what happened.
That's right.
But if not, you had to stop and think about, you know, who's sending this in? It's probably the treasurer or manager or scorer for the team who took the time to handwrite the roster and do the box score. Now, hopefully you could read his handwriting and make out who this is and such as that. But they thought enough of it to send it in, print it in the newspaper. So in the appendix of the book, I have a listing of all the places they played and all the teams.
And they have some great names, like the Democrats and the Picayunes.
Exactly.
Well, I wonder where those came from.
Those were the two newspapers. You know, but you also had the Custer Busters and the Buster Custers.
And the Red Hots, who were firemen.
And the Screw Guzzles, they were firemen. The Headers and Anti-Headers, which were the cycling clubs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Italians named theirs after their target shooting team. They didn't know how popular that was going to be. But everybody except the Chinese had a team.
But you go through that list of names and that's endlessly entertaining.
Well, it's important to know who these people are. They could be teams that were our equivalent of the Carrollton Boosters, you know,
sure,
a little league team. But they thought enough of it to write it down and put it into the newspaper. Now, column space at the time was dear because a paper might go 6 pages or 8 pages. And in those pages, you had to have the local news and the international news and the river news and advertising. And then, you know, it always amazes me when you look at – and I would read the whole paper because you could never tell when the box score would show up. I had this thought that as it comes into the newsroom, someone read it and then they typeset it and put it in. So here's the advertisement for neckties, then the box scores, then a crime report of some sort, and just no continuity. There's no sports section to it.
Right.
So you'd have to read everything to get them all. And so if they thought enough to put it in the paper, it must have been important at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I wanted to write it all down.
So what's next? What are you going to do for a follow-up to these two?
Well, my publisher tells me to slow down. You know, he thinks I'm a little masochistic to have two books out at one time. And it is a bit of a grind, but it's one that I have a lot of fun with. So I have one that's due next year on the Dixie series, which was the third oldest postseason interleague baseball match in the country behind the World Series, which was the oldest. It was the champion of the Southern Association, where the Pelicans played, and the Texas League, where the Pelicans played from time to time. And that started in 1920, went through 1959. And some great people came out of the minor league. So the heroes of the Dixie series might be Dizzy Dean.
Wow.
Or Hank Greenberg, or Ducky Medwick, Joe Medwick, Jimmy Pearsall, who just passed away, the fellow who, when he was at Birmingham, to celebrate his 100th home run, ran the bases backwards. And they weren't quite sure if that was legal, but they found it. So you had all these characters. And that leads to the next one, which is the history of the Pelicans.
Oh, great.
And McFarlane originally had contacted me about writing that, and I said, well, I really want to write this one about 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, why wouldn't you do the Pelicans? And I said, well, it's 158 games a year for 75 years.
That's a lot.
So you can't say, you know, on Monday we played Chattanooga and lost 2-1, and on Tuesday we got rained out, but Wednesday we played a doubleheader. You can't do that for 75 years. My wife won't buy that book. Okay? But you can center it around, and this is where I finally got the structure of it. You can center it around the characters.
Absolutely.
The owners, the players, to tell people that we had to delay opening day 1901 because they couldn't pay the players because the owner was in jail. They said, well, why was the owner in jail? Said, well, he refused to cover his cistern. And they were trying to narrow down the causes of yellow fever. And when Isidore Newman refused to comply, they put him in a room with striped sunshine. And he couldn't pay the team, so they had to delay opening day. So you have that. But then keeping in with yellow fever, in 1905, the team was quarantined when they were on the road.
Wow.
When the last yellow fever epidemic in the city took place, and they only lost 428 people. Now, to me, if I had 428 people die of anything, much less just yellow fever, not diphtheria, not dysentery, not tuberculosis, mm-hmm. not any of the other things that could plague you, okay? And that was a success mm-hmm. at only 428 people. So the Pelicans played two-thirds of the season on the road. They would play the Little Rock Travelers in Little Rock as the home team. And they still won the pennant.
Wow.
You know, it was tremendous. Shoeless Joe Jackson played a season here in 1910. And so the stories around the players and the owners, there was a game in 1907 where Henry the chimpanzee got loose of his cage. Now you say, well, what is a chimpanzee doing at a baseball park? Well, Heinemann, Alexander Heinemann, who owned the ballpark, didn't own the Pelicans, but owned the ballpark, kept a chimpanzee behind home plate.
Oh, I love that all these stories are still to come in book form.
And the players from Mobile were poking at him through the hardware cloth, and so Henry cleared the grandstands.
Of course.
Until they found out that it was Henrietta. And she was with Chimp and not feeling very predisposed to being gawked at. So how many ballparks had two chimpanzees,
much
less the one? And so you can go through all of the stories of the players and the managers and the games and such as that, and you can get through 75 years pretty quickly.
And New Orleans is such a great character in these books. That makes them such a pleasure to read. And it's really fun to see New Orleans through your eyes. I mean, it's just a great thrill.